It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday in just a moment with Wayne Moyer and Donna Hoffman, our analysts today. But first of all, I want to give you a quick update on the tragedy, the fatal shootings of two Iowa police officers in their squad cars this morning in the early morning hours. And to do that, we have Iowa Public Radio's Sarah Bowden. The police have just held a news conference within the last hour. Sarah Bowden was there. Hello, Sarah.
Hey, Ben.
So what new information do we know? We know the suspect's name, Scott Michael Green, a white 46-year-old resident of Urbandale. What else can you tell us?
We also know the names of the officers who were killed, Sergeant Anthony Bimineo of Des Moines, and then also Officer Justin Martin of Urbandale. Anthony Bimineo was a father, and Justin Martin was not married, mid-20s, had just started on the force.
Mm-hmm. Do we know any?
Like within the last couple of years.
What were the circumstances? Did they give any circumstances for how Scott Michael Green, the suspect, was arrested?
Well, not a lot is known, but Sergeant Paul Parizic of the Des Moines Police Department says there was nothing officers could have done to prevent being attacked. When they look at the scene, it doesn't appear that either officer had an opportunity to interact with the person who shot them. It also doesn't look like there was an exchange of conversation. And Sergeant Parizic also said there definitely wasn't an opportunity for these officers to defend themselves or respond to the attack.
Mm-hmm. Do we know any of the evidence they have connecting this suspect with the shootings?
They wouldn't share what led them to Mr. Green.
Mm-hmm. What was the atmosphere in that press conference?
Very somber. You know, there was some, it seemed that both Sergeant Parizic and the police chief of the Urbandale police were, like, very somber, but obviously this has affected them emotionally. It's a very sad day.
Mm-hmm. Any other new items from that news conference before we say goodbye and look to follow this reporting from you throughout the day?
Well, suspect Scott Michael Green has not been formally charged yet. He's currently in the hospital for some sort of unrelated previous injury or illness. He was apprehended on a gravel road in Dallas County near mile marker 100 on Interstate 80. He flagged down a DNR worker and asked him to call 911. He was taken into custody without incident.
Okay. Iowa Public Radio's Sarah Bowden, thanks for the latest on the fatal shootings of two Iowa police officers, that suspect in custody, and the officers, the slain officers, now having been named. Sarah Bowden, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Now we switch with that tragedy in mind and our thoughts with the families of those fallen police officers in mind, we switch to politics. Donna Hoffman is with us in our Cedar Falls studio, associate professor and head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa, and Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield professor of political science at Grinnell College, joining us by phone. Donna and Wayne, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Ben.
Let's talk a little bit about the election just a few days before our official voting day, though many listening have already voted in Iowa's early election. Certainly reason for optimism this week among Donald Trump supporters. Meanwhile, I guess you'd say hand-wringing, stomach-churning in Democratic households across Iowa as polls show the presidential race tightening in its final days. So what is your read on what's going on, Donna?
Just that I think we're seeing a little bit of tightening there. And so we've obviously had a lot of news stories that have come out in the last several days that potentially have some impact here. But, you know, we did see kind of mid, late last week some things looking pretty positive for Hillary Clinton with the news story that came out on Friday in terms of the emails that the FBI was talking about. Then we start to see some things change a little bit. And so, again, looking at national polls is useful in terms of looking at kind of the horse race, but we still want to be looking at the polls in those key states, especially those key swing states, because that's what's going to affect the overall Electoral College vote, which is actually at the end of the day that elects the president. And so there's a lot of different things to look at here and a lot of different ways that you can put the map together in terms of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And still the Electoral College map still looks favorable for her. I believe the latest 538 percentage for Trump puts him at his possibility of winning the elections about at 29%. And, you know, last week it was down to about 10, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. So it's moved a little bit, and those are based on polling things, the 538 model is. And so, you know, certainly there's 6 days, well, the election takes place a week from yesterday, so there's a lot of closing arguments going on in swing states, a lot of ad buys that are going to hit, and people have to make their final decisions if they have not yet voted. But mm-hmm. as you mentioned, you know, in Iowa and certainly a lot of other states, we've had voters take advantage of early voting opportunities.
River to River listeners, we want to get your pulse, so to speak, in the way that we reach out is our six words or less activity, exercise, I guess you could say. In six words or less, what is your mood 6 days before the election? Six words or less on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. We have a post there with a bobblehead Hillary Clinton and bobblehead Donald Trump. Below that, you can leave a comment like Fritz Miller did. His six words, already voted. Thank God it's over. And he asked for two bonus words. I'll say them. Go Cubs, says Fritz Miller. Thank you, Fritz, for that. Another one, it will be over soon. Julie Bontrager, voted early now. Voted early, now need a shower. So some humor there. Join in with your six words. Your mood, less than six words or less on 6 days before the election. Wayne, let me ask you about this, specifically about the announcement by FBI Director James Comey. This was last Friday, that the agency would be looking into newly discovered emails that might relate to Clinton's use of a private server while she was Secretary of State. Now, Clinton has voiced confidence the FBI will not find anything problematic. Your thoughts on the announcement by James Comey to do this?
Well, I think this is work to politicize the FBI, which is something that the FBI, I think, was trying not to have happen. I think it got started last summer when Comey made that big statement at the time the FBI had concluded its initial investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails. And at that stage, by making that statement and then saying he would inform Congress if there was anything else developed, he'd kind of set himself up that when this new trove of emails came out, that he would have to come back and go to Congress. And as soon as he did that, of course, then that created the firestorm which exists today. So in some ways, I think it was a mistake for him to speak out in July, and which then set him up for having to speak out again now.
Mm-hmm. But even so, Donna, even so, we had the Justice Department weighing in before this announcement, advising him, Donna, not to go public with this?
Yeah, they certainly did. And, you know, the emails, and if you read the text of Comey's letter, it was a little cagey in the sense because the emails may or may not have give them a reason to revisit the previous investigation. They don't really know. They just know there's some emails. And so they, you know, Comey caged it in such a way that he got criticism actually from pretty bipartisanly in terms of the FBI inserting itself this quickly before the election. So there's been some pushback now, some of it pretty interesting. You know, for example, Harry Reid sent a letter that indicated that, you know, if you've been investigating Russia and the links between Russia and the Trump campaign, which we know they've been looking at, Harry Reid kind of alluded to some really explosive information that would be there and was kind of asking Comey to, you know, insert yourself in the election then on that stuff as well, more or less. Now, mm-hmm. that, you know, again, this, as Wayne pointed out, this politicization, this is something that the FBI strives not to do, to just stay silent in the days before an election. Comey obviously didn't stay silent here. He said there may or may not be something here. And by not having anything concrete, even, you know, Charles Grassley has sent a letter to Comey and asking to the FBI asking for further information on what they do or do not know, because, you know, there was also no indication of time in the Comey letter in terms of when they might be able to give Congress more information. And right. Grassley has asked for some of that information now because of the nature of that initial letter and the fact that the election is taking place in short order.
Okay, well, let's listen to Senator Charles Grassley talking on just that point. This was, Monday, Chuck Grassley sent a letter to James Comey requesting that Comey disclose why he found it necessary to review the newly discovered emails related to Clinton's private email server. Here's what he said in his call.
We need more information of how Comey came to the conclusion that he ought to reopen it, not anything about the details of the email. And that's the purpose of the letter.
Okay, more details needed. There's a big void there, and of course, where there's a void, it will be filled. Donald Trump knows how to do that. Here's Donald Trump making these comments about the latest revelation at a campaign rally in Manchester, New Hampshire, last Friday when the news broke.
This was a grave miscarriage of justice that the American people fully understood. And it is everybody's hope that it is about to be corrected.
Okay, Donald Trump, the sun is shining for him. He is making hay, Donna Hoffman, so to speak, surely revving up his supporters in all the rallies since then. But I wonder, does this draw more supporters to him, the ones that are undecided or may have not thought they would vote for Donald Trump?
I don't believe so, because if you're a Trump supporter at this point, you're a Trump supporter, and you're probably a pretty fervent Trump supporter. And if you're a Clinton supporter, the same thing can be said of you in that regard as well, because this really isn't a new issue. Her emails have been an issue. And if you're a Clinton supporter, you've made peace with that. If you're a Trump supporter, you know, this is maybe something that boosts your enthusiasm level, but it might have already been, you know, quite high in that sense as well. Where it potentially could help, you know, Trump is if you have those, you know, Republicans who the more establishment Republicans who are, you know, a little uncertain about Trump, this may make them, you know, potentially more enthusiastic about that. Because, you know, we did it, you know, last week, as I mentioned earlier, there was kind of a feeling of malaise, was I think is maybe a good word, that was sort of, we were getting kind of an indication that that was setting in on the Trump campaign. This has given them new life in that sense. And so Donald Trump is certainly thumping this drum at his rallies, but again, he's preaching to the choir. Those are the converted already, and it's unlikely to convert any new supporters for him.
Mm-hmm. Do you share that view, Wayne?
I certainly do. I think the big thing that where this might make a difference is who stays home and who votes, and will this bring some Republicans out who might otherwise not have come out to vote? And maybe some Hillary supporters, I'm thinking maybe of millennials, who were aren't particularly strong on Hillary, who might stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And I might add there, Ben, too, that, you know, this could cut both ways for Hillary Clinton. There certainly could be a lack of enthusiasm there. But again, there was a danger when she was pulling ahead in some of the polls that some of the people who were lukewarm on Hillary Clinton would say, well, I'm just going to, you know, not go vote. This may galvanize them in terms of understanding the polls are now closer, that their vote would actually matter in that sense. And so you may actually, in a few more days, see that affect that. We do know now there's a tracking poll out from the Washington Post that does enthusiasm daily, and Hillary Clinton did take a dip there. But again, you could be unenthusiastic about Hillary Clinton and still actually make it out to vote. So, you know, it is something to look at, but it's not necessarily indicative of if someone is going to vote or not. And certainly on Hillary Clinton, it could cut both ways. You could have this boosting that in the if I can say long term here, since the election's only 6 days away, I'm not sure that's the appropriate response. But as we get closer to the election day, that the polls remain tight, that Democrats are able to use their superior get out the vote machine, which we know that they have over the Trump campaign, to get those people who may be wanting to stay home to push them out the door.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Politics, 6 days away from the election. Perhaps you've already voted. Perhaps you have a question for Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, our political analysts with us this Politics Wednesday, 1-866-780-9100. Or perhaps you'd like to join in with six words or less on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. 6 days before the election, six words or less. What is your mood? We have some others chiming in. Tony saying Trump wins, we lose. Clinton wins, we lose. Third party, Tony is saying on our Facebook page. I wonder if we know, Wayne, can we guess what the effect is on the third party vote? I mean, the conventional wisdom would be that if it's according to polling that Hillary Clinton is safe and in the clear, you can You can vote if you want to for a third party. Some would reason this. I'm not saying everybody. But if it's a tight race, you're likely to pull third party voters into behind one of the major parties?
That would be my – that's what I would think would happen. The closer it is, the less likely people are to vote for one of the third party candidates.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about the controversy over – meddling by Russia. You specifically, Wayne, since you look at politics abroad as well as here at home, the Clinton campaign has been urging the FBI to disclose what it knows about any ties between Donald Trump and Russia. And also the Clinton campaigning accusing the FBI of unfairly publicizing its inquiry into Clinton's email practices while staying quiet about this this alleged connection. Now, we know, do we not, that the FBI has been conducting multiple investigations of these alleged connections, Wayne?
Well, we certainly know that they've been holding investigations. We also have, I think, strong evidence, certainly coming from the intelligence agencies and from Homeland Security, that Russians are behind all of the hacking of emails that has been purely directed against the Democratic Party. And you combine that with Trump's very positive views of Putin, and so there's something going on. I'm not sure we fully know what it is at this stage of the game. The speculation is that the Russians are trying to undercut, if you would, the legitimacy of the American political process, that Putin in some ways trying to divert criticism from him, from himself, and from the way that he's running Russia by trying to undermine unity of the West and undermining the legitimacy of the democratic processes in the West.
Mm-hmm. And certainly Hillary Clinton honing in on this, what the Democrats see as a double standard. Here are some remarks from Hillary Clinton where she mentions Russia, making these remarks at a campaign rally in Sanford, Florida. She called once again for Donald Trump to release his tax returns and then continued.
He has no excuse because his 2015 taxes are not even under audit. And I think the American people deserve to know whether he paid any penalty for skirting the law and how much he's actually worth and who he does business with. I'm particularly interested in the Russian business deals that he has. And, of course, it would be interesting to know, has he ever even given a penny to charity?
Hillary Clinton raising the specter of Russian meddling in our election, or a future President Trump compromised by business dealings with Russia. Your thoughts on that, Donna Hoffman?
Well, you know, this is something that, you know, we saw Hillary Clinton in one of the debates take this tack as well. And so it's certainly something that Hillary Clinton wants to beat Donald Trump up with, given the uncertainty here in terms of what the FBI knows, what they're investigating, what they're willing to say, and then, you know, playing on that double standard that you mentioned, whereas, you know, Comey makes a statement about potentially new emails here, but doesn't make any statement about what they're investigating in terms of Russia because he wants to, you know, remain apolitical in that sense. But he's already inserted himself into the political process. And so this is something that, again, may be Hillary Clinton able to get that enthusiasm back up by talking about Russia, Trump's you know, alleged ties there that we don't really know about, but then also bringing the FBI into that and, you know, maybe insinuating that they're that Comey, you know, isn't playing by the same rules for both campaigns in terms of inserting himself into the political season this close to the election.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have 6 days before the election, but by election time, some 40% of the American electorate, including many here in Iowa, will have already voted. I wonder, Wayne, how early voting shapes this outcome.
Well, it could be critical. Now, It's not clear to me, though, at this stage what it's going to mean. I mean, there's stories that in some states more people than usual have come out and more Democrats than Republicans. In other states, there's a story, I think, yesterday in the New York Times that turnout of blacks in southern states is less than usual or less than expected. So it's not clear to me what it all means at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on early voting and how it's shaping, likely to shape the outcome, Donna?
Well, it's always something that a campaign wants to emphasize if they can. This is part of, you know, Clinton's plan in terms of ground game, because the sooner they can get you to vote, they have a record of whether you've, you know, returned your ballot or not, if you've requested a ballot, whether you've returned it or not. The sooner they can devote other resources to getting other people to the polls. And so campaigns, and Hillary Clinton's in particular this season, and especially in Iowa, have stressed getting into the hands of people they think are their likely voters, those absentee ballot applications, getting them to fill it in when they, you know, get their absentee ballot, making sure that they return that, and calling them, making sure they have a plan in terms of voting, early voting, absentee, day of. And we know that research shows that if a person has a plan in terms of voting, they're more likely to vote. And that is where you see the Hillary Clinton campaign potentially getting an edge here, because they've invested a lot of money in terms of field offices that can activate volunteers, that can do the door-to-door, that can do the calling, that the Donald Trump campaign has not been as active on, and in some places has kind of outsourced it often to the party within the state, and hasn't been very active in terms of recruiting the volunteers and putting an emphasis on that ground game as the Clinton campaign has. They've been doing some of that, but they've been a little late to the game in that regard.
Okay. Wayne, you agree the ground game is a lopsided one in favor of Clinton as well?
Oh, I certainly do. I mean, that's very, very clear.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a short break and come back with more political analysis from Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, our analysts this week, the last Politics Wednesday before election. When we think 1 week from today, we will be saying for the first times of many times for the next 4 years, President-elect Trump or President-elect Clinton. We're asking you in six words or less, what is your mood 6 days before the election? A very entertaining conversation going on in our Facebook page answering that question. We have Matt saying, no matter who wins, disappointment follows, his six words. Esther saying, if only I could travel in time. Michael, it's the lesser of two evils. Travis Anderson, lock Clinton up, truckers for Trump. On the other side of that, Diane, grow the hell up, Iowa, vote Hillary. Join our conversation on our Facebook page. Six words or less, what's your mood? Back with Donna Hoffman and Wayne Moyer, Politics Wednesday on River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, Politics Wednesday. Tomorrow on the program, climate change. We're going to talk about that in the context of this election. Of course, a major issue, an issue with huge ramifications for this generation and future generations, but it's been nearly lost in the clamor of this unusual election campaign. Tomorrow, we'll have some experts on in climate change. Also, we'll take a look at what the candidates and their parties say about climate change, what action, if any, they say they would like to take on this issue. That's tomorrow on River to River over the noon hour. Hope you'll join us for that. Politics Wednesday here, asking you six words or less. What's your mood 6 days before the election? Zach on our Facebook page, America is already great. Dump Trump. Only in a third world country, Bob says. You paid more taxes than Trump, Diane. Petra, she has more than six words, but I'll read them anyway. I will cast my vote on November 8th. My mind is made up on who should hold the presidency. I have peace in knowing I did my research, and I trust in God to work out the rest. Ross, chiming in with a sentiment of many, when will this be over already? Okay, join our conversation. Six words or less, 6 days before the election. Your mood, your thoughts on our Facebook page. Wayne Moyer is with us of Grinnell College, where he's Rosenfield Professor of Political Science. Donna Hoffman, Associate Professor and Head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. In just a moment, mainly leaning on Wayne to talk about some of the foreign hotspots that the next president will have to deal with. But before that, Donna, let me go to you and talk a little bit about the tightening of the polls. There's the ABC News, Washington Post tracking poll has Trump up one. We have other polls, so many polls coming out at this point in the campaign. I wonder, though, when you look at all of them, does this latest twist reopen a possible path for Donald Trump to get to 270?
It opens a little bit greater window in that regard, but it's still a difficult path for him to get to 270, which is what he's going to need. Hillary Clinton, even, you know, 6 months ago had an advantage there. Any Democrat had an advantage there in terms of the Electoral College. And so, you know, in this time period in which all of these polls are coming out, again, looking at averages of polls is, generally speaking, the way we want to look at things. And again, to make that distinction between the national polls, which are not necessarily unimportant, because they can have an effect on things that are happening in the states, but to be looking at what's happening in the states and also be looking at where the Clinton campaign and the Trump campaign are putting their resources, because that's sometimes a window into what their own internal polls are telling them and how they're divvying up the resources.
So what are you seeing there, Donna?
Well, you're seeing Trump spend a lot of time in Wisconsin, for example, and so that's one of the states that the Trump campaign thinks that they have an opportunity to get. Clinton is more optimistic, I think, on Wisconsin, and so they're sending people into Wisconsin, but it tends to be surrogates. So Tim Kaine is spending some time there. I think he was there yesterday. Florida, obviously, is important as well. But Hillary Clinton's then spending some time in Arizona. So, you know, if you'd asked people a year ago, Arizona would be in play. Most people would have said, no, not really. But she's spending some time in Arizona, putting some resources into Arizona, even has more resources there than the Trump campaign, to try to see if they can make inroads into that state that generally has voted red recently but has some demographic shifts that are positive for the Clinton campaign. You also have then the important Senate race there, John McCain. And one of the bigger questions, we shouldn't just spend all of our time really talking about the presidential race because we have other races that are important as well. And one of the big questions next week will be, how does the Senate flesh out? And there are a number of key states that have important Senate races. Wisconsin is one of them. Arizona is one of them as well, that are really tight. And the big question becomes, how will voters behave in those states with the top of the ticket and then those Senate races? Because we know that, generally speaking, in recent cycles, voters have been less active in splitting their ticket, voting across parties. If that holds true, that can have ramifications. If we see some Republicans not voting for Trump, voting third party, voting for Clinton, but then remaining true to their Republican roots for the other races, that can have implications on who controls the Senate. The House, you know, potentially is in play, but that's really a very, very slim possibility. We'd really have to have a Democratic wave election for the House to switch to the Democrats. But the Senate is certainly something that we could see the control go from the Republicans to the Democrats. And so in some of these states where you have, Florida is another one where they're swing states at the presidential level, they also have some really key Senate races going on this cycle as well.
So Iowa, a swing state, could it go either way? Is it at this point light blue or pink in the aggregate? Or is it a complete toss-up, Donna?
It depends on who you ask. There are a number of people that handicap that. But, you know, the Cook Report, which is one of the ones I look at pretty regularly, has it leaning R. But it certainly is a swing state. And so it still could, just because it leans R, it still could go a number of different, either direction. And here, though, interestingly enough, you know, we also have a Senate race, but it's not seen right now as being one of those competitive ones. And so the establishment Republicans, the party here in Iowa, hasn't had any kind of problem getting behind Trump, as you have seen in some other states. And so that's something that potentially gives Trump an advantage. But then again, Hillary Clinton has that advantage in terms of the ground game in the state.
Donna Hoffman with us of the University of Northern Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. And let's spend a few minutes, probably circle back to the presidential election, but for a few minutes, Wayne, draw on your expertise, especially to look at some of the foreign hotspots that the next president will be dealing with from day one. Let's start, if we could, with Iraq. Iraqi forces, we've been hearing, securing their foothold in the city of Mosul, moving from house to house, clearing areas of the Islamic State militants. How is this offensive going? And I think day 17 of the offensive to retake the last major ISIS stronghold.
Well, I think it's going reasonably well, but it's a slog. When you get into urban warfare and fighting house to house in areas where houses are very close together, and in a way, ISIS either has to hold the city or it effectively will be out of Iraq. And that may well be the beginning of the end. So I would expect them to fight. Now, the areas that Iraqi forces are in now are the less populated areas. The old city, the central city, which is they've not yet got to, will be the most difficult, and will ISIS sort of concentrate its forces there and make a last stand? There is also a possibility that ISIS may feel overwhelmed. They may get cut off from the West in terms of other, in this case, Shiite militias. So it could go quickly, but I think it'll be a long, difficult struggle.
And isn't, Wayne, the question after that, if there is and when there is a victory over ISIS in Mosul, their last stronghold, we wonder then, don't we, Wayne, whether Iraq will descend again into sectarian rivalries or turn a page and have a different outcome?
I think that's a very serious risk. One of the things that the Iraqi government is trying to do to avoid that is to keep the Shiite militias out of the center city, which is primarily Sunni. The Shiite militias have been pretty vicious in some of their previous activities, and so hopefully by keeping them away from the Sunni population, you'll avoid outrages and human atrocities, which then would make it easier to unify Iraq. But it's going to be very complicated. There's also another problem in Tel Afar, just a little bit to the west of Mosul, which has a Turkish-based community, and there's a possibility that Turkey may well intervene at that stage of the game. So capturing the city does not mean stability in any sense of the word.
Let's have you touch briefly, Wayne, on the situation in Syria, especially that besieged city of Aleppo. I'm reading the Russian Defense Ministry, which is helping the forces loyal to the president, Bashar al-Assad, take control of Aleppo. What's happening there? And, of course, here, Russia... Russia and the United States are invested here in very, very complicated ways.
Well, if Assad, President Assad, Syrian President Assad, gets control of all of Aleppo, he will control all of the major cities in Syria. He will not control the whole country. The Kurds still have a very large section in the northeastern part of the country. And clearly has full Russian support of this, and clearly the last defenders of East Aleppo are in great difficulty right now. If the Syrian government gains full control, then in terms of any kind of negotiations of Aleppo, any kind of negotiations in terms of a final settlement will clearly give Assad and his Russian and Iranian supporters the upper hand. If Aleppo manages to hold out until after the U.S. election, that may well strengthen the bargaining position of the Europeans and the Americans vis-a-vis the Russians and the Syrians.
Is there a simple way to say how our two major party candidates would deal with Iraq and Syria to point out differences? You are way into the nuances here, and that is a wonderful thing, but most voters really can't study it to that extent. Can you tell us in simple terms how foreign policy in this area would be viewed by a Donald Trump or acted on by Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that Clinton would have more U.S. involvement. She's promised to put up sort of an air defense zone to protect civilians in northern Syria. So she's more likely, I think, to give more support to the defenders of Aleppo. Trump, with his more positive attitudes toward Putin, is, I think, not likely to do anything to prevent the total takeover of Aleppo. In terms of Iraq, I suspect that both candidates, as long as the effort to liberate Mosul and defeat ISIS is continuing, probably would support the operations as they're going now.
Donna Hoffman, what do you have to chip in there as far as the candidates' differences on these foreign policy hotspots?
You know, I think Wayne is right on there. And, you know, it is kind of hard to discern what Donald Trump would do in the foreign policy area, because typically when he talks about foreign policy, he does so in a pretty surface way. And, you know, I don't think that's the major policy issue that animates many of his voters. So he's very savvy in terms of saying the things that his supporters want him to look at. But it is kind of striking that, you know, the American voter always cares less about foreign policy than they do domestic policy. But I think that is especially true in this particular election. The dynamics of it are a little different in that sense, in that there hasn't been a lot of serious and deep discussion about the foreign policy aspects that are quite important, but voters' attention is being put on other things. And it's not necessarily even domestic policy. It's, you know, this really has been called by some people kind of a policy-free election in some ways. And so certainly domestic policy always ranks higher on voters' minds than foreign policy, but we particularly see that being the case, I think, in this particular cycle.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just throw in here, tomorrow on this program we'll be talking about climate change, talk with climatologists, experts in that area to pick apart the positions of the candidates tomorrow dealing with that very important issue on the program. 1-866-780-9100, the last few minutes of this Politics Wednesday with Donna Hoffman and Wayne Moyer. Let's go to the phones. Kay is with us in Coralville. Kay, what do you want to ask about?
A couple of questions. I was very interested in Senator Grassley asking for more information from the FBI director. And I... my concern with Senator Grassley, he seems to be more interested in his party than in the state of Iowa or our country. Mm-hmm. You all realize that he's blocking our Supreme Court, the third branch of government, from acting effectively.
Okay.
And I just have a lot of trouble as what is his interest. And I'm also curious about why is it that Giuliani comes into the state promoting Trump and with Grassley's consent, I'm sure. And he, when he was governor, his wife and his mistress both lived in the governor's mansion.
Okay, Kay, there's a lot there to unpack. I'm gonna, in the interest of time, throw that over there. Okay, first of all, this is, Wayne, is it not a place where Democrats and Republicans are uniting, at least in public, to say we want more information on this this announcement by James Comey and the FBI?
Yeah, I think there's a general concern that by not providing more information, the innuendos sort of build up, and it's rumors develop, and I think that's not fair to Hillary Clinton to have this just sort of raised and just leaving open what the possibilities might be.
Mm-hmm. And Kay mentioned the use of the surrogate, one of the most fervent supporters of Donald Trump, Rudolph Giuliani, former mayor of New York, Donna Hoffman, of course, a long history of surrogates being used in these campaigns.
Yes, and he, Giuliani in particular, is, Newt Gingrich is another one. Both of them are going out and, you know, supporting Donald Trump, and they also engage in kind of a similar type of rousing rhetoric as well. And so they're seen by the Trump campaign as being effective surrogates to send out there to have rallies that are similar to the kinds of rallies that Trump has, because they are, you know, in trying to whip up the enthusiasm of Trump supporters, and they're using the same kind of rhetoric that he is using.
Mm-hmm. Let's have you briefly each talk about the aftermath. What you see here, we could have a number of different outcomes this time next week. It could be a Clinton landslide. It could be a nail biter in favor of Clinton. It could be a surprise with Trump in a some kind of victory here. What do you see in the aftermath, Wayne, here? What are questions, Chief, in your mind?
Well, there's going to be a big issue, I think, whoever wins in terms of unifying the country and in terms of getting any kind of legislation through Congress. I think in light of the FBI thing, if Trump by any chance wins, there's going to be a firestorm from the Democratic side that the FBI tilted the election.
Mm-hmm.
If, on the other hand, Hillary wins, in some ways, that will undercut the Trump charge that the election is rigged. So I could see that one playing out either way. I'm not quite sure, but I could see both of those possibilities afterwards.
Donna?
I don't think it's even a possibility to talk about uniting the country at this particular point. Now, certainly they'll each try to do that, I think. But the Congress will be divided almost certainly, even if we have a Clinton presidency. The Senate could be 50-50, in fact. That's one of the options here. Or, you know, the Republicans could maintain control. But it's highly likely that Hillary Clinton has a divided Congress, that the Republicans will probably maintain control in the House. And in the previous Clinton administration, we saw lots of investigations. I don't think that that abates at all in terms of continually looking into allegations of a new Clinton administration. But I think one of the important aspects here is the groundwork that has already been laid with this language of rigging the elections and already portraying Hillary Clinton as an illegitimate president, basically, if she were to win. And I think that's particularly troubling and then has ramifications for what we have in the past always striven to do in the aftermath of a divisive election, which is come together. And I don't think there's a big opportunity here for either of these candidates to be able to do that because of the very divisiveness of this election and the unusual nature of it and some of the rhetoric that you had coming, not from, you know, people within the campaigns, but from, you know, sometimes the candidates themselves in terms of unfairness, undermining institutions. Now we have the FBI undermined, which, of course, they kind of did that themselves in this instance. But just a lack of trust in terms of the American public, of experts, of elites, of politicians, of, you know, institutions, that I think is really troubling and is something the country in the future is going to have to come to grips with. But I'm not really sure how we do that.
Mm. Okay. Back to a few six words from our Facebook page before a closing comment from each of you. John, in answering in six words or less, his mood 6 days before the election. John, six words, congratulations, Madam President, truckers for Clinton. Steve saying, what difference does it make? It's a reference to Hillary's Benghazi question. The answer, according to Steve, it makes a big difference. Never Hillary, according to Steve. Robbie, choosing sanity and trustworthiness, voting Gary Johnson. Monica, protest vote, because both are awful. Joanne, excited to vote for Hillary, and so on. So thank you for all the input we've had on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. I guess I want to ask Donna and Wayne before we say goodbye and not talk until Election Day or after. Well, let's imagine the outcomes that we could have here. As I mentioned, a Clinton landslide, a modest Clinton majority, a nail-biter in favor of Clinton, I guess polls could indicate that, or a shocking, surprising, narrow victory, shocking to pollsters, for instance, in favor of Donald Trump. Wayne, which one do you think is most likely?
I think probably a narrow victory by Hillary Clinton at this stage of the game.
Mm-hmm. Donna, would you be with that one as well, or do you want to?
I would say probably a little more than narrow victory for Clinton, just again in terms of looking at the Electoral College at this particular point. And also then we want to talk about the Congress, I think. And, you know, I think that the Senate is probably 50-50 odds in terms of whether it moves to the Democrats or not. And the House, I think, is probably out of reach at this point from the Democrats. But, you know, a few weeks ago, things were looking better for Democrats in that regard. And so that presents, you know, a potential Clinton campaign with a divided government and not getting a whole lot done in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Moyer, very quickly, you're looking at perhaps a 50-50 Senate, too. Do you join Donna in that analysis?
Well, it could go either way, I think. And I think it makes a huge difference how it goes. particularly in terms of Supreme Court nominations.
Okay, we'll follow it, of course. Election night coverage right here on Iowa Public Radio together with NPR. Wayne Moyer, thank you for being with us. Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Donna Hoffman, Associate Professor, Head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. Donna and Wayne, always great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Ben.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Also help from Divine Huff. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.